From Everbank Field in Jacksonville, this is Jaguars.com Live. A weekly look inside the Jacksonville Jaguars organization. Jaguars.com Live starts right now.
Good afternoon and welcome to Jaguars.com Live. You can see a beautiful sunny day on the banks of the St. John's River. Brian Sexton in for an ailing J.P. Shadrick, joined by senior writer John Osher.
I'm all out of balance today, Brian.
Well, but
I'm over here. I'm over here.
But you're holding up your end of the bargain pretty good.
I'm fine. Well, thank you.
Energetic.
Nice jacket. I see it's new.
Yeah, well, stylish. You know, when you sit in this chair,
you got to be stylish.
There is a high standard that you have to meet.
And there's a standard.
We'll do our best over the next 20 minutes or so to meet the standard of Jaguars.com Live. Here's what we've got for you today over the next 20 minutes or so. We're going to go through, we're going to flip-flop that just slightly because Charlie Casserly, who is going to join us, needs a few minutes to get his stuff together. And so we are going to talk about the coaching additions here. And we've also got a couple of stories to share with you. And we'll just get started right away. All right.
So
let's talk ball. Let's deal with the most obvious one first. Mm-hmm. And that is that, Chip Kelly was here this week. And that's been the talk. And it makes a lot of sense because you're looking to see how Tom Coughlin and how Doug Marrone are going to change things up. I think a lot of people assumed, for continuity's sake, John, that it would just be Nathaniel Hackett, plug and play, here we go. That's not the case.
Well, it's Todd Walsh on the defensive side of the ball, which is a little bit of a plug and play. Although I expect the scheme to alter there. I think my gut is it will eventually be Nathaniel Hackett. But it seems like forever. But Tom Coughlin got hired 9 days ago.
Right.
Doug Marrone officially got hired 9 days ago. To everybody following this, this feels like forever. It feels like it's all we've been talking about. It's all we've been thinking about. Within the grand scheme of the organization and what they're going to do going forward, it's a very small amount of time. They needed time to get to know each other. They needed time to figure out their direction going forward. Chip Kelly came in and talked, and I don't know that he's not going to get the job. The longer it goes,
I don't feel any energy in the building for it.
Right.
And you know we would. Even if we didn't know specifically he was going to, there'd be a buzz here, kind of like Tom.
And the longer something like that goes, the longer, probably not. So whatever happens on that front, here's what we know. Tom Coughlin and Doug Marrone talked to Chip Kelly. I'm sure there were conversations, I don't know who was in the room at the time, but there were conversations of, hey, does this work? We know your offense. You see us. You see our personnel. Is this a thing that we think can be successful going forward? Those conversations were had. And whatever the answer is, they've had the conversations, and now they know, okay, we like this better than we like this. We feel comfortable going forward. That's what this 2 or 3 week period needs to be about. It doesn't need to be about quick trigger. Okay, let's get going because we got to get going. There's time right now. Make the right decision.
Let's tie it in to special teams coordinator Joe DeCamillis, who returns to Jacksonville. He was here in 2007 and 2008. And if you remember, and most people don't, the special teams here during those 2 years were really good. Rick Goslin from the Dallas Morning News, who does the annual special teams ratings, his own version of them, had the Jaguars pretty highly ranked when Joe
was
here.
Brian, I know nothing about Joe. I know his reputation.
Oh, he's terrific.
What does he bring?
Well, first thing is he brings a wealth of knowledge. His father-in-law is Dan Reeves. A lot of people may not know that. So he's grown up in the game. And he has been with the Broncos and the Giants and the Falcons and the Jaguars and the Cowboys and the Bears and then back to the Broncos. He's won championships. He's competed for championships. The thing he brings is a sound philosophy, which is why he was here so quickly. Still has a home in Ponte Vedra.
Right.
He's a dear friend. And he also brings an intensity. I mean, lots of guys are. Joe is his real. I mean, he just bleeds it out. Joe is one of the best special teams coordinators in the league, and it's widely known. So players see a level of credibility when it comes to Joe D. Here's the thing and how Joe D ties into Chip Kelly. I talked to Joe on Friday after he had taken the job. And the thing he said was, there are a lot of people who want to come here. Tom Coughlin comes in. They see the ownership. They see the roster. Mm-hmm. They see the salary cap. They see the facilities. It's Florida. The weather's good. The division is attainable. This is a really marquee job.
And that's what's changed in the last half decade, Brian.
Well, and we're talking about, by the way, a team that's lost 10 or more games, 6 straight seasons.
Right.
You wouldn't necessarily hear that sort of effusive praise coming from a guy. He might just be low-key, but he wasn't. He had a genuine enthusiasm, which is natural for him. But the minute I heard Chip Kelly tied to this franchise, I went, well, of course. There's a lot for a guy like Chip Kelly to like about this. And he probably wasn't the only guy to pick up the phone and say, hey, Doug, Tom, how do I get in on the conversation here?
And that, I think, is a – it seems to be a characteristic. We'll talk more about the details of the staff. But the characteristic, if there's something changing, is you listed the guys that Joe's been – or the teams that Joe's been around. You're getting more and more guys now who have been in prominent positions for a 10, 12, 15-year period. That doesn't necessarily guarantee success, but it does show that that's the direction and that's the mood they want. Judging by the inexperienced level in the locker room, because this is still, by many measures, a young team, that feels like the right thing right now.
So we mentioned Joe D, and he'll also, you know, the bottom of the roster is generally where he calls his guys from, mm-hmm. right? That's what special teams is about. Young guys getting a chance. He'll get guys more ready to play at the bottom of the roster, which helps Dave Caldwell and Tom Coughlin as they build the roster up. Todd Wash, number 6 overall defense, a huge jump last year. You mentioned most of the guys are gone.
Right.
Gus's scheme could leave with him. I know we haven't really had much of a chance to talk to Todd.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if the entire thing, but again, we all get so caught up, Brian, in talking about scheme and this and that. Over time, all of these schemes gradually start to look alike, and there's elements of everything involved. I think Todd probably liked some of the elements that he was working with Gus and see some other things that could be brought in and added to it. I expect sort of a metamorphosis, if you will, a changing rather than we're going to come in and run, put this scheme down, this is what we're going to do. It doesn't always work like that. Things evolve over time. I think we'll see it really evolve away from the scheme last year. But I'm sure there are some things that Todd was comfortable with. He's done it for 4 years. There's going to be some elements of it.
Well, and he's bringing Perry Fuel, right? Tom Coughlin bought Perry, who was the secondary coach here from 98 when you were here through 2002.
Sure.
And then went on to success with Tom as his defensive coordinator for a time with the Giants, won a Super Bowl, has been with the Bears and the Bills. He's been around the league.
Again, 20 a lot years of experience coaching. In the room.
So why wouldn't you take Perry, and I'm sure Todd will, and say, okay, what did you see here? By the way, he was the coordinator of a defense that had a ferocious pass rush that offset Tom Brady in the pocket that game, that second Super Bowl in 2012. So why wouldn't you do that? Why wouldn't you put those pieces in place? It speaks to what you're talking about. You're not coming in and putting down a playbook and saying, this is what I do. You're saying, well, this is my background, and this is what I think. Show me what you got.
I've got a lot of questions this week, Brian, about, Tom's hiring these guys that he knows. Flaherty, Fuel. They're all Tom's guys, is the thing that I keep hearing. Well, they're also, I think, on paper, and I think probably in fact, pretty good coaches.
By reputation, they're very good coaches.
I'm sure Doug Marrone's going, pretty good coach. Yeah. Pretty cool, huh? I mean, you know, and I'm being flippant on that front. But, you know, if they're good coaches, they're good coaches. And I don't think it's a case of Tom coming in and going, hey, Doug, here's the resume. Let's go. You know, it's a case of, hey, we got a chance to get this guy. Hey, let's have at it. You know, and the conversations are obviously deeper than what I just expressed. But don't necessarily think because Tom's been around for 12 years that it's force-feeding this coach that somebody else doesn't want. Pretty good coach.
If you can get Pat Flaherty,
right,
who was the offensive line coach for those teams in New York that won 2 Super Bowls.
All right, so Doug hears that. Hey, I'm all in. Let's go.
Yeah, absolutely. Why wouldn't you?
Why wouldn't you?
Because if you recall, they were having to mix and match. Guys had gotten hurt, and they were having to move guys around and playing different positions over the course of those seasons. Right. So here's a guy in Flaherty that, by the way, spent a year with Chip Kelly in San Francisco. So, you know, what did he glean from that experience out there? Here's a guy that is a specific Marrone hire, Tyrone Wheatley.
Right.
He was with Doug in Syracuse.
Right.
He was with Doug.
Strong connection, New Orleans.
With the Buffalo Bills.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
I'm sorry, right.
I think what you're seeing, though, is a collaboration. By the way, Joe DeCamillis had never worked for Tom Coughlin.
Right.
Right. He had never worked with Doug Marrone. He's a guy who picked up the phone, and his reputation and Tom Coughlin's reputation brought it all together. So it's a
Which
collaborative
is sort of
effort.
How you build a staff.
Yeah.
I mean, so
open some doors where you can.
Right. And that's probably the biggest thing is you are getting guys who, A, want to be here, and getting back to Flaherty, because I know Charlie's joining us in a moment. I'm not a huge stat, you know, stats one place don't always apply to the next.
You bet.
But top 10 in rushing offense, top 10 in sacks allowed often during his career, more than once. He's gotten it done. He can do it. It's still about players, but he's shown – he has the resume. If players ask who this guy is, he can show them who he is.
All right, so that's where the Jaguars are currently. Obviously, they need a linebackers coach, and they'll start working on that if they're not already close to being done. The offensive coordinator still to be named, a tight ends coach, a wide receivers coach. So still plenty of work to get done on this staff in the days
to come.
And this
is an okay pace. We can ask Charlie about this when he joins us, but you don't have to hire your staff all in one day. There's an interview process, a vetting out process. It's supposed to take some time. You don't want it to all happen overnight.
Charlie Casserly joins us now, longtime NFL personnel boss with the Redskins, and of course you know him for his work on NFL Network. And Charlie, first of all, welcome to Jaguars.com Live. We're pleased to have you.
Great to be with you.
Give us your sense of Tom Coughlin and Doug Marrone pairing up with Dave Caldwell in Jacksonville. When you first heard it and what you've seen over the last couple of days.
Well, I've been impressed with what they've done. I think they have a good job getting off to a start and hiring the staff. I have a lot of respect for Tom Coughlin. He's an outstanding football man. He's highly dedicated. I have a lot of respect for Doug Marrone. I think Doug Marrone did a good job at Syracuse. I think he did a good job at Buffalo. I think he's an excellent football coach. I think Dave Caldwell's done a good job of bringing some young talent in there. So you have three guys that are good at what they do. Now, the question is meshing job responsibilities, putting egos aside. And Doug's got to be the head coach. Tom can't be the head coach. Doug's got to be the head coach, and I think Tom understands that. But Tom would be a tremendous resource here and a tremendous advantage for the franchise. And so this thing can work. And it's just everybody fit in the parts, having their jobs clearly defined, and everybody putting the team ahead of themselves.
Charlie, real quick, the thought of Tom moving from the sidelines to the front office, that's even though he's had some personnel responsibilities when he was here the last time, it's clearly a step away from what is familiar to him. What advice would you give him on leaving one job behind and taking the other one? Because you just said Doug has to be the head coach.
Yeah, and I think he has to, understand that. It's interesting. When he was at Jacksonville, he ran everything as a head coach. In New York, he didn't run everything. Okay, so now he's kind of trying to get in the middle of this thing. But I would say he's going to have to just make sure he allows Doug to be the one voice that the players hear. The players should never hear another voice other than the head coach, because they got to believe the head coach is in charge, and the head coach is in charge of discipline and accountability, and that's it. And I think his asset would be all his experience. Now, Doug's job is to use Tom as an asset, okay, a sounding board to bounce things off, obviously help on the staff, his contacts in the league, his personnel knowledge. So, all those things that Tom can be great at, and Doug's a very open-minded guy, so it has to be a give and take on both sides there.
How important can that be, Charlie, in terms of, you've got a guy like Tom Coughlin who clearly has more than two decades experience in a lot of different roles. Is the vision in that job sort of at the forefront of the organization, which he is now? How important can that be? It's sort of intangible. Fans don't really grasp what it can be, but how important can that vision, that voice at the top be?
Well, I think it's huge. I think Tom's going to have a lot of assets. But the number one asset he's going to have is desire to win. Like in that press conference, hey, it's all about winning. That's going to permeate through the whole organization, number one. Number two, it's going to be a football-first vision in that building. That's going to help Dave, and it's going to help Doug Marrone. And Tom's got one way to do it. It's football and only football, okay? And that's going to give the owners a clear vision of how this thing's supposed to look. That's the greatest asset Tom's going to bring there, and that is huge.
What is he stepping into? You follow the league. You follow the players, personnel. There's a feeling among some people this team's close. They had a lot of close games. How tough a task is this?
Well, when jobs open, there's always a reason they're open, okay, because they're not ready to go usually, okay? I thought when I was there in training camp they were at least a year away. They've got a nucleus of young players. The defense is starting to come along. They've got some of the young skill players at receiver who have done well. But what they're missing is that core group of veterans that's not there to show them how to win. And that's hard to get in free agency, because you can get some, but you're not maybe get quite what you want. So I thought they were another draft away, missing that veteran group, counting on too many young players at one time to come through to win right now. That being said, if we're starting from zero, in other words, we're going to have a couple years to work with this thing, I think it's a great opportunity. Lots going to have to come down to Bortles. I mean, is Bortles the guy or is he not the guy? That's still not decided. And you, if he's not, you got to start over again at quarterback. But if everyone has patience with this thing, there's no reason why they can't win.
Do you have an opinion on whether Bortles can be the guy or not?
I'm still out. I'm disappointed that he didn't improve this year. What I'd really like to know if I was there is this guy's work ethic and burning desire to win and how important football is to him. I can't judge that from afar. But I have not seen the improvement I wanted to see in him. That bothers me.
You know, I know that you said, and I agree, that Doug has to be the head coach. And I've been here since Tom got started way back in the early 90s, Charlie, and I know his reputation with quarterbacks. I used to go sit in his office as he was looking through tapes, and I saw his focus on Brunell, and I watched as he developed from afar Eli Manning. So I'm just, it seems to me like Tom has something to add to Blake Bortles' development. He's a bit of a quarterback whisperer if you look at his history going all the way back to Doug Flutie. It would seem that there is a way for Tom to help. Maybe I'm wrong. What would that way be?
Well, it's a delicate balance because you can't have too many voices with the quarterback. Now, you know, if this is between Doug and Tom and the offensive coordinator working that part out to get the voices coordinated there. So is there a way to do it? Yeah, there's a way to do it. It just has to, it's a delicate balance that you have to have.
What do you think of Dave Caldwell's role? We're all still wondering how it's going to work out. He's a young guy, and the roster's really in pretty good shape when you look at the young talent, especially on defense and at wide receiver. This would seem to be a tough blow for him, although he's not acting like that. Your thoughts on Dave and what he does from this point forward and where he goes?
If I were Dave and I would give him advice, I'd say, you know what, they just hired a potential Hall of Fame coach to run this thing. Get your notebook out and take notes,
yeah.
Okay? And that's how I would approach it if I was him. And I told our owners, hey, if you can go hire a Hall of Fame coach to replace Joe Gibbs or whoever I was, you go do it. Don't worry about what my job responsibilities are. Get him, and we'll figure it out after that, okay? And I think Dave will take that approach to this.
Yeah, so far he has. When you look overall, though, Charlie, at this at the picture in Jacksonville that's taking shape, there's some interest. The staff they've put together, bringing in a talent like Perry Fuel and Pat Flaherty, for a team that's lost double-digit games for 6 years running, and coming off a 3-13 team, which is a bitter disappointment when people expected them to do better than that. There is an energy and enthusiasm that Tom brings to this equation. So, what can they be based on what you saw last year? In year one of Tom and Doug, what can they be? Can they be an 8-8 ball club in 1 year?
Yeah, I don't get into predictions. I think you just what you want to do. I think you saw Doug Marone's snapshot for 2 games, and I think from what people told me, the discipline, the accountability that was there was impressive. 2 games is 2 games; it's not 16. But Doug will get them to play hard, and he'll have them accountable. And he'll get after them, and they'll be motivated, okay? So I think that's the positive. I don't know what the record's going to be. That's impossible to say.
You dealt with Tom a little bit when he was GM. Any Coughlin memories for you?
No, not really. My biggest memory from him was when the year he was off, he came to our training camp and spent time with us, and that year off tells you a lot. I mean, this guy was at the combine taking notes. He's studying tape. I mean, he was working as if he was still working, which was the thing to do because he was going to be back in a year, so you better be ready when you come back. And that's the thing about him is just the intensity and the dedication and love of the game. And that will wear off on everybody around him.
Charlie Casserly, ladies and gentlemen. You can follow him at Charlie Casserly on Twitter and obviously up to the minute at 4 o'clock on NFL Network. Charlie, we know you're busy. We certainly appreciate your time. Have a great rest of your afternoon.
Okay, thank you. Great to be with you. Good luck to you now.
Thank you. Charlie Casserly.
You knew he'd be good.
Yeah, you also, well, it sounded like you had a grandchild with him. Do you want to share your story?
Oh, well.
You couldn't hear. You didn't have the headset on.
No, I couldn't.
There was a crying child in the background.
Is that right?
I was waiting for you to pop up and tell the story.
No, I didn't have a headset.
Well, share with the audience here real quick because
when I was working for the Times Union, this is 97, 98, Charlie was the general manager of the Redskins at the time. And I was making calls. It was at night. My son was probably 1, maybe 2 years old. Probably 1, as a matter of fact, because this was the age. Still in his crib. I get a call back from Charlie Cashley, 9:15 at night. You know how it is. And all of a sudden, Jake, my son, just starts bawling. And I'm like, you know, man, I got Charlie Cashley on the phone, GM of the Redskins. This is probably 2 weeks before the draft. So he's in the war room taking time. And so he hears him crying in the background and says, hey, go take care of it. I'll call you back in a half an hour. And I was like, all right, great. And so sure enough, he did. So class act, gets it. Always a guy, if people care about this, which they don't, always one of the most accessible, helpful, professional GMs among the 32 at the time. You could usually get him on the phone, and as you heard from him today, always had something intelligent to say when you asked a question about the NFL. I thought he was outstanding today.
Well, and we would have called him back. In fact, we did call him back, and now we know the reason why. He had a grandchild with him.
And that's fair game.
Yeah, there's a little irony there. All right, before we sign off for this J.P. Shadrick-less edition of Jaguars.com Live, kudos to Jalen Ramsey and to Yannick Ngakoue, named to the Associated Press All-Rookie Team. No real surprise there.
Right, and both of them showed what they can be. Obviously, the ceiling for Jalen is out of this world. For Yannick, 8-sack guy as a rookie. He looks like a guy who can be that sort of guy for a while, and that's what this team needs.
A week from now, you and I will be in Mobile.
You're darn right.
We will be watching practice somewhere and doing Jaguars.com Live from the sunny confines, probably of Daphne,
shivering in
Alabama.
Front of a gray day that's threatening rain and doesn't actually rain. That's always how it is in Mobile.
The Senior Bowl, no doubt.
I'm looking forward to it.
All right, me too. John, thanks so much.
All right, Brian.
And thanks to Joe Fortunato and Max Hollywood Hawkman for making this show possible this afternoon. For J.P. Shadrick and John Osier, I'm Brian Sexton. Thanks for joining us on Jaguars.com Live.